The following is a presentation of Sports Addict Media.
It is Thursday. It's a week after Thanksgiving, November 30th. It's 10:02 here on the East Coast. Joe Cacavalli, Joe Sacco. We have Alplan tomorrow with us as well. We have a lot to jump into. Obviously, we didn't get to a show last week. I had a bunch of things going on. I actually went away for a few days, so between the holiday and that, it was hard to be able to get on. But we're here now, and a lot has gone on in the last week, 2 weeks since we've been on. The Jets officially opened Aaron Rodgers' practice window to try and get him off injured reserve at some point this season from his Achilles tear. We'll talk about that, obviously, with Al. Does it even make sense at this point? We'll dive into that. We've seen back-to-back wins by the New York Giants have all of a sudden put themselves maybe out of reach of that top three or four pick to land a quarterback. But if you listen to what they're saying, they may not want to go that route anyway. And, by the way, there's a lot of talk about the Yankees maybe becoming the Yankees of old again, talking about, you know, Yamamoto and Bellinger and Soto and all that going on. And Joe, you know, people who talk about wrestling, like, we usually save a few minutes for at the end of the show. Saw CM Punk come back to WWE over the weekend. So a lot happening for sure. But, you know, we'll start with football as we always do. But, Joe, it's good to get back on here. Hope you had a great holiday with the family as well.
Yeah. Everything was pretty good for everybody all around. So it was pretty fun for sure. Definitely not relaxing, but that's what happens. And I can report, Al, it is 10:02 and I'm still awake, okay? Not past my bedtime. We are a day later than we normally are, of course, and we do apologize to that. We'll try to get back to normal by next week, back into our regular spot Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Al probably wants to kill you and I, Joe, because, I mean, I know Al's always prepared every night, ready to go. If he can have it 5 days a week, 7 days a week, I'm sure he'd have his show 7 days a week. But we do appreciate, being flexible there, and especially to all three of our listeners. We appreciate you sticking with us as we fluctuate through our schedules here a little bit. But, yeah, definitely a lot to talk about, obviously, if we don't get to everything, which we're going to try to do in a short amount of time. What's been going on the last couple of weeks? It certainly has been busy here in the New York scene, Joe, as you mentioned. Of course, with the Yankees and the Mets kind of getting the offseason up and running here a little bit. The winter meetings actually take place next week. They actually start on Monday. So in Nashville. So it's definitely a very interesting time. And it sounds like that there are a lot of players that want to kind of get things resolved right around the winter meetings or maybe before the winter meetings. So it's definitely going to be an interesting week for sure there. It's going to be an interesting weekend. I mean, when you just said that at the top of the show there, and I'm sure Al would probably agree when we talk to him in just a couple of seconds here, Aaron Rodgers, they opened up the practice. What is it, a fast food restaurant? Let's just open up. Hey, we're going to open this up right now. Let's open up the window for Aaron Rodgers to come on back from this Achilles surgery. It's just weird. It's just so weird how some of these sports teams, like, they describe things. It really is just very weird. I don't know if it's the sports teams or it's the people that are talking about it, but I'm sure you guys will talk about that in a little bit. So yeah, let's get it rocking and rolling here. And Al, I guess let's start with that. Really, let's start with the fact that it's, you know, I know the Giants have won two in a row. That's a pretty big deal as well. But I mean, I feel like we have to start with this opening segment here with Al and the Jets opening up the practice window for Aaron Rodgers. And you gotta tell me, as a Jets fan, like, even when you hear something like that, what goes through your mind?
Why? that's what goes through my mind. Why? And, you know, and all day, every day, you know, I got all the sports talk on, the First Take, the Get Up, all the shows, Sports Center and everything. And the only explanation I can think of is, Finally, I'm starting to hear people questioning, you know, jobs. Be it Sala, Hackett. I'm watching the Cowboys game, so I'm thinking McDaniels. I can't get the name out of my head. Hackett, you know, all the way, you know, to the GMs, to everything. And I've been questioning their jobs, I mean, for more than the season, but certainly, like, you know, this whole season going on and the whole debacle since the Rodgers injury, and as bad as, you know, the team has looked, and maybe it's people trying to save their jobs. I know Aaron Rodgers is, you know, he's cut from a different cloth, and he wants to do it because he can, to show that, you know, like, I can be the fastest to ever come back from it, and I can do that, and I get it from his perspective. From the Jets' perspective, it makes no sense. They now have 10 losses, which would mean 7 losses. They would have to win out, you know, to be, you know, 10-7 and to realistically have a chance, and that wouldn't even guarantee get them in.
They would need significant help.
We know
help.
That's not happening. Yeah. We know that's not going to happen. Even if Rodgers was coming back this weekend, they're not winning out, you know. Even if you were still alive, you're going to bring Rodgers back now with this offensive line? The turnstile, they have 5 turnstiles up there. There's no players on their offensive line. They're just the subway turnstiles. So, I mean, he's going to tear his other Achilles. There's absolutely no reason to bring him back now. If you are serious about going forward next year with Aaron Rodgers, you need him healthy. So there's no reason to do that. You bring Boyle in, they announced that he's going to start this week. You know, he's worse than when Wilson, and we knew that going into it. So that there is no logical reason except maybe people trying to save face to try to show that there's some positive going on in this team. You know, those can be the only reasons.
Well,
but,
well, Al,
you know,
let me ask you.
At this point, we're going to what Joe is saying is we're going to hurt our draft stock, because what a lot of people haven't realized is in our continued losing, we're now picking 7th. And we're tied with a bunch of teams simply because we've had our bye already. Hopefully, we lose to the Falcons this weekend. 2 or 3 teams are going to actually fall behind us. The Jets are going to wind up picking in the top 5, possibly. So, you know, like, I think, you know, it's stupid. Get him healthy. We want him next year. Then, you know, like, there's absolutely only, you know, the heir to the throne to be king of all fools would put him into a situation at any point this season.
Well, let me ask you this. It makes me wonder because, you know, the Yankees are very good at PR spinning and all that stuff. Do you think it's quite possible that now maybe the Jets as an organization is looking at this from a business standpoint where, you know, Aaron Rodgers goes down and that's where everyone kind of gave up their hopes and, you know, maybe they were looking at the fact like, oh, great, there goes possibly our ticket sales or whatever. You think just hyping him up and trying to get him back and opening up this practice window maybe is from a business standpoint? And they're just trying to make sure they keep people in the seats no matter how bad that they've been and the fact that they might not make the playoffs again?
Well, I mean, it's not might not make the playoffs. They're not making the playoffs. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. You know, like, that'll put butts in the seats. You know the Jets could lose out, and if he comes back the last game of the season, that game will sell out. Mm-hmm. It'll sell, you know, jerseys. It'll get people talking about them. You know, that actually – it's just a logical reason, you know, as any other of the few that there are, is why you would bring that. So, I mean, that could be it. You know, that actually makes sense to me as opposed to...
You know what I'm saying? I thought of it because the Yankees would pull... The Yankees always pull stuff like that where, you know, they try to use something to get people in the seats at that point because at the end of the day... You know, ownership or whatever, you know, they want to see a bottom line and they want to see a bottom line that's in the positive for them and not the negative, even though, you know, I'm sure it's pretty tough in football considering how well that sports generates revenue that they would have any sort of issues with that. But that's just something that I kind of thought about as you were like talking about it, because why else, you know, you're of sound mind of a Jet fan, but also a football fan. And, you know, you watch the game and you study the game enough to know that is just, it would be asinine to bring him back, especially at his age. And you definitely don't want to lose him for next year when, you know, he'll be healthy, knock on wood, right? So, yeah, that's the only thing I kind of thought of when it came to that, because I feel like the Yankees were always notorious for that, and I'm sure, Joe, you'll agree with it. And we'll get to you now, of course, a well-deserved bye week for the New York Giants as they head into this week, where they'll get to sit back and relax a little bit. But they've won two in a row here, and, you know, it'd be a long journey for them as well. It doesn't look like anything happening there, but, you know, they're 4-8 now on the season. And as Al said, too, like, you know, if they continue to win, or, you know, they're in a different direction here, they could, you know, their draft stock could be hurt, as you said, as well at the top.
And it's funny because, you know, as I'm sitting here watching, I'm watching the Islanders right now because they're at least starting to win a little bit. At least have the Islanders and the Knicks to kind of keep me busy. But, you know, the Giants are in kind of a bad spot right now because all the signals they're sending up are that they believe Daniel Jones is not only going to be the starting quarterback for next season, but beyond going forward. I mean, obviously they have to say he is next season because you're not getting out of that contract till the end of next year at the earliest. So they have to send at least the right message that Daniel Jones is the future. But, you know, they would have been crazy to think that they wouldn't get better for their future by taking a quarterback at the top of this draft. But, you know, it's hard to convince players, and, you know, Joe, we've heard it a million times through sports, it's hard to convince players to lose. You can't really make guys lose. They all want to win. They all want to go out and win at the end of the day because it helps you feel better at night. You know, you get to win a game with your buddies, and it's hard to tell players to take a dive. So now when you're looking here at the Giants, you know, there really isn't a silver lining or a thing of hope that can come back and save the Giants this season. I mean, Daniel Jones, even if he was a quarterback on the level of Aaron Rodgers, he's not coming back. There's no inch of hope for that. I mean, maybe they get Tyrod Taylor back in a couple weeks here, but, you know, give credit to Tommy DeVito. He's at least leading this team and seems like he has the locker room behind him. So if you're of the mindset that you're not making a quarterback change next year and you're not going to draft one next year, then maybe you just kind of let this thing fall as it does and let this roster win a little bit, because, you know, you might not make too many changes in the offseason. There's clearly a feeling from Joe Shane and from Brian Daboll this roster can still win football games. So, you know, we've said it all the time, you know, if only they were this bad last year, maybe they would have had their quarterback already. But, you know, they're kind of making it seem like they have no interest in tanking or no interest, you know, taking a dive for the quarterback. So at least you give the paying fans, kind of like you said, Joe, the people that are still paying to go to the games, maybe you give them a little bit of excitement to at least see a winning game and see a team that's fighting and cares to win. So, I mean, is there a positive? Yeah, but the long-term outlook for me is I kind of can't help but being a little selfish here trying to go for a quarterback.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned, they are going to get the week off here as they enter their bye week. So let's take a look at the matchups here in Week 13, and then we'll get into our picks. But before that, we'll let the guys preview at least, you know, the Jets this week and maybe a couple of other highlight games. But right now, happening in the third quarter, the Seahawks and the Cowboys on Prime Video. Seahawks winning 21-20, but they are in the red zone now. At the Dallas 8, so the Seahawks are threatening to score yet again. And, I mean, that would probably be a...
They're spreading this defense. They're spreading it.
It's, you know, that would be pretty bad for the Cowboys there, losing here at home, especially 5-0 at home here. But good for the Seahawks as they are, again, within striking distance of taking a lead right now or extending their lead. They're up 21-20. Over to the Sunday slot, we start with the 1 o'clock games. You're going to have the Tennessee Titans. They're home, 4-7. They'll welcome in the 6-5 Indianapolis Colts. The Patriots will be home as they continue to race for the number one pick and possibly what could be the final few home games here for Bill Belichick and his run with the New England Patriots. They'll host the Chargers, who are 4-7. The New Orleans Saints will be at home. They'll take on the 8-3 Lions. The Saints are 5-6. The Jets will be home at MetLife Stadium, 4-7. As Al mentioned before, they're taking on the visiting Atlanta Falcons, who are 5-6. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to be home to take on the 2-10 Cardinals. The Steelers are 7-4. Miami will be in Washington. They'll take their 8-3 record and go up against the Commanders, 4-8. And the final 1 o'clock game, you'll have the Houston Texans playing host to the Denver Broncos, both teams 6-5 on the season. In the 4:05 slot, you'll have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They'll play host to the Carolina Panthers, who are 1-10. So by far one of the worst teams in the league. You have the Rams and the Browns at 4:25. The Browns are 7-4. The Rams are 5-6. Philadelphia will host the late afternoon slot at 4:25. They'll host the San Francisco 49ers. Pretty big matchup there. It'll be a battle of two heavyweight teams right now. And then the 8:20 game on Sunday night, we'll see the Kansas City Chiefs, 8-3, go visit Lambeau Field to take on the 5-6 Green Bay Packers. And the Monday night game, we'll see the 8-3 Jaguars host the Cincinnati Bengals, who are 5-6. As I mentioned, with the Giants, you'll have the Bills, Bears, Raiders, Vikings, and Ravens all on the bye week. And Seattle has scored. They are up 28-20. Still with plenty of time left in this game, as the third quarter only just started a few minutes ago. So that game is at 28-20. So I guess, you know, because the Jets are the only local team in action here, Al, let's preview that game before we really get into our picks here. So, again, there's the hype now around Aaron Rodgers, but they got the Falcons coming in on Sunday. What can you tell us about that game and previewing that game for Sunday?
Okay, so if anyone's having sleep problems, turn the game on. You know, it'll be on CBS. they play at 1 o'clock. Oh, it's actually a Fox game.
Fox
because
game.
So I guess the Falcons, yeah, so it's a Fox game. 1 o'clock, Channel 5, tune in, and I guarantee you'll go to sleep. Because what we're seeing here is not only two very good defenses, the Jets are an elite defense, and the Falcons are one of the better defenses in the league. Quietly, that they're keeping them in that race, in that, you know, in their bad division. Two very respectable defenses. But when we speak about the offenses, you're watching two of the worst run offenses in all of football. Two quarterbacks that have no business being quarterbacks. Desmond Ridder for the Falcons. I wonder if he's ever played quarterback before. I think, you know, like they switched his body with someone else. And Tim Boyle, who, if you've seen his college numbers and his NFL numbers as the backup, you know, last year with the Lions and now with the Jets, I don't even know how he's on a roster. I mean, even his college numbers are like, wait, this guy played? They're that bad. And not even just that, not even as bad as both offenses are and bad as both quarterbacks are, it's the offensive coordinators. Not only are they bad, but even if they weren't, the style of offenses they run, I mean, when you look at the Jets, Breece Hall, Garrett Wilson, two of the best young players in the league, some of the most exciting players. Falcons are the same thing. Bijan Robinson is top five talent as a rookie running back right now in the league. Drake London, another top receiver. Kyle Pitts, we thought was going to be, you know, the next, Shannon Sharp or something like, and they're not even used. Because you have offensive coordinators that just run very dull, boring offenses. So for that, I think we're going to see a defensive struggle because you have two good defenses going up against bad offenses, so it should be a slow game. It's going to probably come down to who makes the most mistakes, because both of these quarterbacks will certainly make them, and who can capitalize on that. It'll be a low-scoring game, and you know, the team that makes the least mistakes is going to wind up winning like a 17-14 game. It's going to be real dull. And honestly, I'm hoping the Jets lose. Because the Jets lose, that brings them to 4-8. I think that moves them up to like fourth or fifth, you know, in the draft order right now. And if we're going to do a draft show, we can go into that. But, you know, obviously our biggest need is offensive line. But I'm also thinking ahead. Aaron Rodgers is turning 40 on Saturday. Thinking ahead, you know, if we can draft a quarterback, there's a very deep quarterback draft. If we have a top pick, ooh, there's so many things that I've been thinking about this week, you know, what we can do here. So, but I think we're going to have a pretty bad game to watch on Sunday.
Well, if it further proves what you said being extremely accurate, this game has one of the lowest over-under odds, 33.5 as the over-under. By far the lowest over-under out of this week's football slate. So Yeah, 30.
Because the two offensive coordinators are like the two engines that could. Like, they're like, I think I can. As long as you don't give the ball to our best players, like, maybe we'll score.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson has just 64 receptions on the season. I mean, that's right.
Because nobody can throw him the ball, you know. The Falcons have outright admitted that they use Bijan Robinson, who, again, as a rookie, is one of the five best running backs in the league right now. And they, like, we use him as a decoy. Okay, good thinking, guys. Yeah. Like, use your best player as a decoy, you know. Like, it's just, it's just bad, you know. So, 33, I think that's being generous, you know. 17, yeah. 14, I'd be surprised if it breaks 30, honestly. Yeah.
All right, let's get into our picks here. And pretty much like everyone else would at this point, if you're somehow still surviving in a survivor pool, or you're in one of those survivor pools that you can take a team more than
I
once.
I won mine, by the way.
Nice.
2 weeks ago,
I won. But I was going to say, in this case, you at least have two teams that you know if you're playing up against, you better take them because it'll be easy. Or it'll, you're not easy, but because anything can happen, but still. So basically leading into my first pick, I'm taking the Chargers at -6. They're taking on the Patriots. The Patriots just look lost at sea, and obviously now they're probably looking more so ahead in the sense of rebuilding this team, and it could possibly be without Bill Belichick. So, but again, I'm looking at it from a standpoint of it's a bad team, and if you want a close to surefire win as far as like getting your win for the pick of the week, I'm going with the Chargers -6. Joe, your first pick.
So my first pick, I'm going to basically go with a pick 'em here. I'm going to take the Titans here +1 against the Colts. I mean, for the bottom line of it's a divisional game. These two teams played really tough when they were in Indy a few weeks ago. And, you know, I think Will Levis could be something here for Tennessee. I really think that he could be a good option in the post-Tannehill era. You know, they picked up a nice win against Carolina last week. So I think the Titans are in store for an interesting one here. I think the Colts are not a really great team. The fact that they're going to be on the road playing a team that usually gives them headaches, and we know that Derrick Henry loves to pop off against the Colts. So I'm going to go with the Titans here, slight underdog at home. I'll take them +1.
Al, your first pick.
All right, I'm going to follow Joe here and take the Chargers. Do we have them at 6 or 6.5? What did it go in at?
It went in at 6.
Yeah, so I like the Chargers -6. They're at New England. You know, New England's defense is still at times, you know, because there is talent on that defense, despite, you know, all the injuries, you know, can be stingy, especially at home. The quarterback situation is a mess. They're benching Mac Jones weekly. Like, weekly, they bench him halfway through the game because he's playing so bad. They bring Zappe in, who's worse, let's be real. But they're doing it just because it's like, they got to do something. You know, their rookie kicker has been pretty atrocious, which is, you know, why they lost to the Giants last week, which really helped the Jets draft stock. And when we look at the Chargers, we don't understand why the Chargers are 4-7. You know, I mean, I understand it's because of coaching, and they have horrible coaching, but that team is loaded with talent. They lose close games. They just can't seem to win despite, you know, Justin Herbert and all their offensive firepower and, you know, and Mac and Bosa, who I'm not sure if Bosa will be playing this week, but regardless, they should have no problem, you know, stopping this New England offense. And they're a scoring team, you know. They'll score a minimum 21 points a week, you know. So even if it's a little ugly because, you know, they're just not playing up to what they should be, I don't think, you know, the Patriots can keep this close. You know, I think, you know, probably more like a 2-touchdown game here. So give me the Chargers -6.
All right, so with my second pick, I'm going with the Lions here at -4 against New Orleans. You know, this Lions team is really good. Obviously, a little bit of tough luck on Thanksgiving. But then again, their record on Thanksgiving is horrendous. So I think it was just a little bit of a wake-up call for them as far as, you know, getting back to the way that they've been playing football. So I'm going with the Lions at -4 against the Saints for my second pick. Joe?
Well, like Al alluded to, I'm going to go with the Chargers as well, minus six against the Patriots. A lot of the reasons he just mentioned with Bailey Zappe taking the ball for New England, doesn't look like they want to win a lot of games here. I think they want to go for a quarterback in the draft, either Drake May or Caleb Williams. I think they're kind of getting ready for the post-Belichick era. I think they're ready to finally wipe the slate clean here. And, you know, they're just having a rough go of things offensively. I don't think Zappe's going to be any better than Mac Jones. And, you know, if you're looking at the Chargers, you know, I agree, just like Al said, you know, Brandon Staley has been horrendous as the head coach. But, you know, on the surface, yeah, they lost to the Ravens by 10 last week. But, you know, they had fumbles from their three key players with Herbert, with Eckler, and Allen all fumbling in that game. So that was just some really bad luck for them. I think they're better than the record shows, obviously. I mean, they need to start putting some wins together here. The Chiefs continue to keep putting up good performances. And, you know, it's just the Chargers are too good to be losing like this. And the Patriots probably not playing their best guys going for the win here. I just feel like the Chargers, they need it. They need to keep those slim hopes alive. But like I said, you know, they played a really good team tough last week. They just couldn't get out of their own way. So eventually they have to put it together for four quarters. And I do think that happens here. I might be giving Brandon Staley and the Chargers a little too much credit. And I usually hate taking them at any more than 3 points. But I just think the talent difference is too much to ignore. So give me the Chargers minus six on the road in New England.
All right, for my second, I'm going to follow Joe again. I'm going to take the Lions minus four. Look, they were not good on Thanksgiving. That Packers team stinks, and they punched the Lions in the mouth, and they beat them. I think that's more of, you know, just anything can happen on any given Sunday thing. The reason why they lost and the reason why they should have lost the week before against Chicago is the turnovers. All of a sudden, the last two games, Jared Goff has been giving the ball to the other team. He's throwing interceptions. They're fumbling the ball. But even after that Bears game, we were talking about them, you know, amongst the elite in the NFC, you know, basically saying like, hey, do they belong in that top tier with the Eagles and the 49ers? You know, do the Cowboys belong there? Do the Lions belong there? I think after that loss, it was like, no, they're probably tier two. I mean, the almost loss to Chicago. And then that loss to Green Bay solidified them, you know, now in the tier two. They're going to look for a little bit of redemption. Jared Goff was in the MVP, you know, conversation until, you know, last week. So I think they're going to try to get back to where they are. This is a really good team on both sides of the ball. And they're playing the Saints team that's not very good. You know, they're a mediocre team, you know, with half-decent quarterback play. Chris Olave's been, you know, everything we thought he was, and he's going to be, you know, a top receiver in the league for a long time. Shaheed might not be playing. He's listed as questionable. Kamara's come back with the vengeance. But, you know, other than those few guys, the Saints team is, you know, they're winning in a bad division, you know, and they're just a mediocre team, and I think that's all you can expect from them. And with the Lions looking to get back on top, I think, you know, they're not going to pull any punches, and they're far superior than the Saints team, and I think they shouldn't have any trouble covering the four. So give me the Lions minus four.
All right, so for my third pick, I'm going to go with a heavy favorite here. I'm going with the Dolphins at minus 9.5. You know, they're coming off of a win against the Jets. The Commanders, I think they put out a statement today or what, yesterday. They're a little bit of a mess on the defensive end. I think they needed a new they fired the defensive quarterback or somebody, or I think some other defensive. Yeah, there was two coordinators that were fired by them on the defensive side. So they're a little bit of a mess here. So I'm going with the Dolphins at minus 9.5 with my third pick. Joe?
I'm going to go with Tampa Bay minus 5 here against Carolina. You know, Carolina parting ways with Frank Reich this week. You know, that offense has not looked good at all. You know, I do think part of it is growing pains from Bryce Young. But, you know, this Tampa Bay team, they were showing some good fire here in the beginning of the season with Baker Mayfield. I think they have the weapons to get it done against Carolina. And, you know, like I said, the Panthers, it's just their team that's clearly not going anywhere right now. I think this is a game the Bucs can easily win. It's a division game at home, you know, at minus 5. I think Tampa Bay, their defense is good enough to make Bryce Young make some mistakes. And even though they haven't been that great lately, I still think they have a chance to get a nice win here at home. So I'll go into that 4 o'clock window there, and I will take the Buccaneers at home, and I will lay the 5 points against Carolina.
For my third, I'm going to follow Joe again. I like the Finns minus 9.5. You know, I talk about them every week. As a Jet fan, you would think I hate them, but I love this Dolphins team. One, they're the most fun team to watch in football. I like a lot of the players. Tyreek Hill is my favorite player. Tua has been very hot and cold this season. You know, Mostert, Arcane could be back this week. You know, they have some stars on their defense, though at times they can be susceptible. I haven't been proven by them yet that they can beat the really good team, so I'm not sure how high their ceiling is, but they have shown us that they destroy bad teams. You know, they put up 70 on the Broncos. They destroyed all the bad teams they're playing. The Commanders are bad. The Commanders gave away their two best defensive players because they're in complete rebuild mode. You know, it's going to be, you know, the Panthers, whose pick goes to the Bears, and I don't know where that team is going. We should talk about them 1 week. The Cardinals, the Patriots, and the Commanders, you know, are looking at those top spots, and I think they're in a complete rebuild at this point. I don't see how they're going to slow down this elite juggernaut, one of the best offenses we ever seen. So, yeah, give me the Finns minus 9.5, and I think that's going to be like a 40-10 final score.
Yeah. I'm going to go and continue, not a heavy favorite, but I'm going with the Chiefs at minus 6 for my fourth pick here. They're in Green Bay. You know, Green Bay has been up and down here, 5-6, but Al basically kind of summed it up before when he said they kind of stink. So I'm going with the Chiefs at minus 6 for my fourth pick of the week.
All right, for my fourth pick, I'm going to go with the 49ers at minus 3. Now, the Eagles have, you know, credit to them. They've gone through an absolute dogfight and a really rough patch in their schedule, but they've come out of it with a lot of wins here. I mean, they were able to really impress me with a couple of games. I mean, they looked pretty shaky at home against Buffalo last week, able to pull that out in overtime, but I think Buffalo kind of blew that one also. And, you know, they had to beat the Chiefs, they beat the Cowboys, they beat the Dolphins, and, you know, this Eagles team is clearly really good, but eventually that run of luck is going to have to run out against these really good teams. I think we saw some ways they can be exploited, you know, in that game against Buffalo. And I think San Francisco is kind of rounding back into form here. They had some injuries early on. They had some bad luck. But now that everything is back running again and Purdy seems to be back on top of his game, you know, they had a really impressive win over Seattle last week. So I think they're really playing their best football right now. They're back to being a Super Bowl contender. I think eventually someone has to knock the Eagles off, especially at home. They've been playing really, really close to the vest with these really good teams. I think eventually that luck, like I said, it has to run out. So, you know, I do think this is going to be one of those real pillar games that we look at when we get to the postseason to see where everyone kind of shakes out and see who matches up where the best. But as of right now, I'm going to take the Niners in this matchup, and I'll take them at minus 3.
All right, and my fourth, I'm following Joe again. We got four identical picks. I like the Chiefs minus 6 here. Me and the Chiefs have a bad picking relationship because when I pick them, they don't cover. And then I'll ignore them for a few weeks, and they'll cover every week. And then I'll pick them, and they lose. I don't know what it is. I'm not sold on the Chiefs this year. But there's two things that I do know. One, Patrick Mahomes is 100% the MVP. I don't care what people say. Jalen Hurts, all these other teams that have all this talent. Patrick Mahomes is throwing to a bunch of scrubs. His receivers stink, aside from Travis Kelce, who's a tight end. And you take him off that team, they're one of the worst teams in the league. So he's an MVP. And two, defense is quietly one of the best defenses in the league. They're going up against this Packers team who have won 3 of the last 4, you know, against the Lions, against the Chargers, against, you know, pretty bad Rams team. They lost to Pittsburgh. They stink. I've watched them quite a few times this year. I'm not sold on Love yet. Now, I'm not giving up on him, but I'm just not sold on him as a quarterback. You know, Aaron Jones is out, so they're leaning on Dylan. Their young receivers seem to be incredibly inconsistent. And each week, you know, I'm watching the Chiefs. They find ways to win, you know, with their offense. And, you know, their defense is just seems to be getting better week by week. And they're already amongst the best in the league. And, you know, this is, you know, another, you know, possible Super Bowl run. And I don't know how Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes do it, but I think we're going to see it again this year. So give me the Chiefs minus six.
And for my final pick of the week, I'm going with the Steelers at minus 5.5. I think that, you know, in the drips and drabs that I've been able to kind of maybe tune in on their games, usually the back end of those games when they throw them on after the first games, I think that they've looked pretty decent. They're also going up against a 2-10 Cardinals team, so not much there for that one. So I'm going with the Steelers at minus 5.5 for my fifth and final pick of the week.
I was real close, Joe, to taking Arizona there only because the Steelers are doing kind of a revamp of their coaching staff and they're having fights in the locker room. But, I mean, that could be a get-right game for them, so I stayed away from it. But my final pick, I am going to actually roll with the Jaguars here at minus 8. I mean, Joe Burrow's injury has obviously sent the Bengals into kind of a tailspin. You know, they were mine and Al's Super Bowl pick. And for the AFC, and, you know, that's a tough loss for them, really. And now the fact, you know, Jake Browning, his backup, has been kind of injured a little bit, but it seems like he'll play. I mean, maybe we'll see AJ McCarron if he doesn't go. Maybe they'll bring Akili Smith out of retirement if this is the way things are going. Or, man, I just dated myself with that. Maybe I should have said Carson Palmer. But anyway, I'm going to go with the Jaguars. I mean, look, Jacksonville, outside of that big loss to San Francisco, where, you know, they got shelled by the 49ers, but I think that just shows how good the 49ers are. I mean, they won 5 in a row before that, and they've won 2 in a row here. I mean, you could say they're getting a little lucky here by getting the Bengals without Burrow, and, you know, their receivers are getting a little bit healthy. But in the end, you know, Trevor Lawrence is really starting to play like he was the number one pick for a reason. He's really put together some really good weeks here. And the Bengals are a team that's a little bit, I think, demoralized. And like I said, if they're already down their starter and could be going to their third string soon if Browning doesn't end up to be healthy, I just feel like this is a game where the Jaguars can make a real statement here. They want to prove that they can take that spot at the top of the AFC with Cincinnati officially being out of the picture. So I think they do that here. Give me the Jaguars, and I'll lay the 8 at home.
All right, two things. One, Bland just got another interception. This guy is just unbelievable. And two, Joe, as you were saying with the Steelers, you know what it is with that team? T.J. Watt, he is a wrecking crew. Okay, so for my last pick, I'm going to go also with the 49ers minus 3. You take away that they had a 3-game losing streak this year, and that was, you know, McCaffrey was banged up, Deebo Samuel was out, and Trent Williams. And they're the lifeblood of that team, Trent Williams and Deebo. They're the leaders. You know, they're the vocal guys. Since they've been back now, they beat the Jaguars by 31. They beat Tampa Bay by 2 touchdowns. They beat Seattle last week by, like, 3 touchdowns. This offense is just as good as this defense. They're loaded with all-pro talent on both sides. Now, don't get me wrong. The Eagles are, you know, Super Bowl. They lost in the Super Bowl last year. They could be there this year. My pick, obviously, was the 49ers to not only make it and to win, but I wouldn't be shit. You know, right behind them are the Eagles. The Eagles have looked a little off this year. They don't look as good as they looked last year. They turned it on last week at the end, and they winded up coming back to win the game. Jalen Hurts just looks a little off. Now, he's doing it when he has to, and in clutch times, he's amazing. But through the entirety of the games, he doesn't look as good as he looked last year. He doesn't look as sharp. The same thing with their defense. They're not as opportunistic. They're not getting the turnovers and the points. Now, this team is, you know, they capitalize on mistakes. And in crunch time, when you know, the pedal's to the metal, they can turn it on. You can't beat the 49ers like that because they're not going to let you hang around and be down by 3 that you can have a game-winning drive. You have to play the entire game to beat them. And I don't know what it is, but they just something off about, you know, the way the Eagles have been playing, especially, you know, the last 5 or 6 weeks. I think maybe they need this. Maybe they need a loss. They need a get-right game. You know, they've only had the 1 loss during the year. they have to realize that, you know, we can't just win on a game-winning drive. And I think this team, you know, with the offense, they're going to put points up against this Eagles defense. And though the Eagles, you know, offense is very strong, they're going to struggle a little bit against the 49ers, and you're not going to be able to just play the second half of the fourth quarter and win. So I like the 49ers in this spot, and I think they're going to make a race for that one seed. So give me the 49ers -3.
All righty, and there's our picks for the week. Do you have the overall standings before we let you go?
Yep.
What do you got?
Yeah. I got to scroll back up.
Yeah, we have a bit of a long message thread between the three of us here.
Yeah, my goodness. Holy Christ, it went coach. Hold on.
While Al finds that.
All right, here we go. I'm at first. This was after week 11 because we didn't do the pick for week 12.
Yep.
So I'm at first at 35-19-1. Joe is 5 games back at 30-24-1. And then Joe C is 5 games back at that at 25-28-2.
All right. All right. Al taking the lead here. The Cowboys did score again. And right now in the third quarter with about 2 minutes to play, it's the Seahawks 28, the Cowboys 27. All right, Al. As always, we thank you for joining us for talking a little bit of football here, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
All righty. Albert Plantamori here, Two Cups of Joe, a sports show, Joe Sacoa, Joe Cacavalli, wrapping up the football talk there with Al. And we got to switch it over here because, you know, we got the baseball winter meetings happening over the weekend. Starts on Sunday, really starts on Monday, but the meetings do start on Sunday and will last out there for 4 days in Nashville, and things are starting to get pretty juicy up there. Of course, the Mets did a couple of things. They signed Luis Severino to a one-year, $13 million contract, so Severino doesn't have to leave New York. He's just going to be playing for the Mets and not the Yankees anymore. They also signed Joey Wendell as a utility infielder. I think that's quietly a very good pickup right there for the Mets. So little minor things happening. We really want to get on the bigger scope of things. Sonny Gray signed a contract with the St. Louis Cardinals. Apparently, he wanted to be a Cardinal. And usually a guy like him, Joe, that would take until about the winter meetings to really start doing it. But little things are happening. But obviously, everyone is waiting for quite a few big dominoes to fall. One of them being, of course, Shohei Ohtani. Where is he going to sign? The other, Juan Soto, he's absolutely on the trading block. San Diego has no money. They are cash-strapped, so they're going to have to make this move now if they want to at least cash in on the value of Juan Soto. Of course, the Yankees are heavy on Juan Soto, but you know, is it going to be where it's going to cost them a lot of prospects, where Yankee fans at this point were saying, just do it, pull the trigger. You don't get a Juan Soto on your plate, but then, you know, you hear the whole, well, it's for a rental, he's a Scott Boras client, he's definitely going to get to free agency in 2024. So, you know, that's another domino that has to fall. And, of course, the Yamamoto domino will have to fall as well, but he cannot be posted until next week. But once he is posted, or I believe he was posted, and now teams have 45 days of a window to negotiate a contract and get a deal done. So, and the Yankees, as you mentioned, Joe, at the top of the show, are burning a few fires, Cody Bellinger being another guy that has been heavily linked to the New York Yankees. So this is an exciting time if you're a baseball fan, for sure.
It's going to be really interesting, Joe. I mean, you mentioned all these big names could be on the move here. Tyler Glass now, you know, Corbin Burns is another name that's been talked about maybe that could be traded here. And there's another couple small market teams that are going to save money. But, you know, it really begs the question, Joe. And, you know, I feel like there's that top echelon of guys. Obviously, I'm sure Brian Cashman doesn't want to part with your Jason Dominguez's, you know, yeah. Anthony Volpe, Drew Thorpe, their pitcher who just won, you know, minor league pitcher of the year. They probably don't want to part with him in a deal. But I think beyond that, I think you have to be willing to listen on a guy like maybe Everson Pereira. Maybe you listen on Oswald Peraza if you feel like you can trade him and then maybe work out an extension with Labor Torres.
Well, you know what it is?
Working.
I don't mean to cut you off there, but the reason why I would probably say from a Yankee fan standpoint you push a guy like Peraza is because, Joe, let's just face it. Look at the track record over the last few seasons when it comes to the Yankees and their prospects that they bring up. I believe they nurture them too long, and then by the time they come up here, they have that flash in the pan season, and then it quickly fizzles out. I mean, we can go back quite a few years. You know, we talk about Jesus Montero. He was supposed to be the next big catching prospect for them. They wind up trading him, and his career becomes nothing. You know, you look at a guy like Gary Sanchez. Again, he was in the Yankee organization since he was 16 years old. Had a couple of good seasons, couldn't stay healthy, and then production went down. So, listen, for a guy like Juan Soto, you are putting everybody you possibly can in that type of deal. But you also have to understand, though, you're not going to give up the farm for a guy that's essentially a rental player at this point, because he's definitely going to hit free agency as a Scott Boras client.
And obviously, you know, the Padres have a bunch of infielders. They just gave Xander Bogaerts a big contract. Manny Machado's got an extension. They're paying Jake Cronenworth.
And they also took him. And they wound up taking out a loan from Major League Baseball, and they had failed to pay it for the month of September.
Right. So, I mean, they need money right now, but maybe shortstop isn't the way they're going to want to go. I mean, they had to move Tatis to the outfield to make room for all these infielders, but, you know, the Padres are in a tough spot here financially. A.J. Preller has done a lot of big things here to end up jumping up payroll and go for a World Series they haven't won yet. But, Joe, do you think it makes sense for the Yankees to go for the package deal of Bellinger and Soto? Because at least if you sign Bellinger long-term, you know that if you get Soto for a year, you kind of push all your chips in, and maybe you do compete or win a World Series. If you're able to do that, and Soto leaves in free agency, at least you know you still have Bellinger to fall back on.
Yeah, and obviously they are very heavily involved in Yamamoto. They have been scouting him for over a year. Brian Cashman took various trips over to Japan to watch him pitch. They apparently, and this was a really interesting report, Joe, I don't know if you saw it, but they apparently held off giving out the number 18, which is his number in Japan, which is a significant number in Japan. They held off giving that number out to anybody this year, basically saying the number is yours, come play for us. That was an interesting report that we saw.
Well, yeah, because I remember years ago Kuroda wore 18 for the Yankees, and that's like the number of the ace in Japan. That's like considered to be the big time number, and the only reason Tanaka wore 19 instead of 18 when he came here to pitch for the Yankees is because Kuroda was still here, and Tanaka had so much respect for him that he didn't take 18 off of him, and they ended up not switching the number once Kuroda left. But, you know, those big reports, and a guy like Yamamoto, you feel like, Joe, he's going to have even more attention on him than Kodai Senga did last year when he signed for the Mets. I mean, he's clearly the top pitching prize in free agency, especially with the fact that Shohei's not going to pitch next year. So it's really going to be interesting. I mean, how far these teams are going to go. He's only 25 years old, so You can give him, you know, a 6-7 year deal, and you can still feel like he's still going to be in prime pitching age once that contract runs out.
So it makes me wonder a couple of things here, Joe. It makes me wonder if the Yankees are maybe employing Masahiro Tanaka to kind of maybe pitch the idea of pitching for the Yankees to Yamamoto, because I know that they're relatively close back there. And, you know, Tanaka has only played for one major league team, and that was the New York Yankees, and he pitched. I thought he was very well worth the contract that he signed, so I wonder if Yamamoto gets something similar to what Masahiro Tanaka got. And, again, wonder if he's part of the recruiting process as well. So, again, a lot of big things that are happening, you know, in baseball that we're going to monitor, of course. And, again, the winter meetings gets underway on Monday, and then, of course, you have the Rule 5 draft, but I would not be surprised if some major, major deals get done during the winter meetings. That's usually when action starts to pick up. And again, it comes down to the fact, where is Shohei Ohtani going? And, you know, it makes you wonder that the Yankees are involved. We hear their names heavy in Soto, in Bellinger, and in Yamamoto, but yet not even a whisper for Shohei Ohtani, who basically all 30 teams should be knocking at the door. Makes you wonder if maybe it is still accurate that he prefers to play on the West Coast.
Yeah, and I feel like, Joe, they kind of put a wet blanket on that early. I mean, it seems like Ohtani is not their priority. I mean, I'm sure the amount of money he's going to require, knowing the fact he's only going to be a hitter this year. I mean, Joe, I kind of said it multiple times, the few times he's pitched in Yankee Stadium, it really hasn't gone all that well. So maybe he's just kind of thinking he's going to stick on the back burner here. I know the Texas Rangers have been very heavily interested in him. Maybe the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, hell, if he went to Toronto, he'd have a whole country behind him rooting for him every time he took the mound or every time he stepped up to the plate. So, you know, could be him. You know, maybe he goes to the Dodgers. Obviously, every free agent gets connected to the Dodgers at least once. But, you know, he's going to be – I feel like he's the one that's really holding things up. I mean, because besides Aaron Nola and Sonny Gray, I feel like a lot of pitching markets have moved pretty slow because everyone wants to see what Ohtani does because, A, you want to see where the other pitchers go, but, B, you want to see who still has money to spend once Ohtani is off the board. So I think once a team makes a move like that, then maybe you see them back off on Yamamoto or Cody Bellinger because they've already, you know, given so much money to Ohtani. So, you know, that's going to really dominate the headlines, but I think wouldn't shock me, Joe, if at least one major trade, whether it be Corbin Burns, Tyler Glasnow, or Juan Soto goes down by the time we take the air next week.
Yeah, I would have to think, and again, by that point, you know, I think they would be in the last day of the meetings, and then you get to the Rule 5 draft, and that's when a lot of people, or teams have to make deals to kind of get guys certainly under contract. So, again, it's going to be very interesting. And, yeah, by next week we might be talking a little bit more extensively on the MLB hot stove as we're going. And, of course, like I said, next week's show we'll get back to your regular scheduled discussions. We'll talk and check in with the NBA in-season tournament because, obviously, the Knicks have been able to secure themselves a wild card spot. They're going to take on the Milwaukee Bucks in this now elimination round. If they do win, they'll head over to Vegas to the semifinals. So exciting stuff here, especially with the in-season tournament. Of course, you got the New York Rangers who are playing very well on a bounce-back win. They're at the top of the league right now, is the best team in the league points-wise. So things are going good for them. The Islanders got a very much-needed win tonight. So again, those are things we'll touch base on next week. But as we kind of wrap up the show here a little bit, a pretty significant thing happened over the weekend on Saturday night at WWE Survivor Series War Games. You don't hear a pop like that unless it's Stone Cold Steve Austin or The Rock, and it was neither. It was the return of CM Punk to WWE after nearly a decade out. And he showed up. And what's amazing is that they did it at the very last dying seconds of the show where the copyright sign comes up. Usually when that marks that the pay-per-view's over, the event's over, they put that up on the screen and then boom, his music hits. So at this point, Michael Cole and Corey Graves are not on the air at this point. Their headsets are off. I mean, it was loud, Joe. Again, you only hear that. You only hear that for The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It's funny, you know, I was telling you, Joe, how I was upstate over the weekend, and, you know, I had such bad service most of my time up there, but I made sure I found the little amount of data to watch Survivor Series, and when, like, the title card comes up, that's, like, Triple H's thing. He did it a lot when he used to run NXT, too, where, like, the final title card would run out, and it's like, okay, I guess the show's over, nothing's happening. And then they just kind of panned out and zoomed out on the ring for a second. I was like, this is a little weird. And then, like, when that static hit, I mean, that building exploded, and I kind of, like, almost fell out of my chair, which is really hard to explain where you're just staring at a cell phone with earbuds in, and then you flip the thing like it's a friggin' table, yeah. But it was definitely quite the moment, to say the least.
And it's interesting because then, of course, they pan immediately to Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins was in an infuriated, almost a borderline tirade, legitimately flipping him off and throwing F-bombs left and right. And it makes you wonder, is it something that they're building up to be a storyline and it's actually turning personal because they know that that's how you sell a real story? Or is this, like, legitimate beef here?
I think it's a mix of both. I mean, Seth Rollins had some pretty unsavory comments about CM Punk, you know, months ago, and they asked him if he wanted him to come back to WWE. But, I mean, you know, no offense to Michael Cole. I'm sure he keeps himself in great shape, but I have a hard time believing he's going to hold back a guy as jacked as Seth Rollins from beating up CM Punk if he really wanted to. So, I mean, it's going to be a part of the show. I mean, look, this is probably the hottest WWE has been in a long time. You had Randy Orton come back on that show as well. I mean,
yeah,
people are talking a lot about this is, wrestling in WWE, so that's a huge one.
This is where classic WWE, now especially with Endeavor as their new partner here, and that's, of course, in the world of Dana White's and stuff, but this is now, okay, we're going to take AEW and put them in the chokehold and put them down for the count, because numbers have been dropping significantly for AEW in the ratings war here as they still try to stay relevant and compete against WWE. But WWE is now probably getting back into its booming business. And it's interesting, Joe, it took a major sale and an acquisition and less control from Vince McMahon and more control from Triple H.
That, and, you know, I feel like the fact that there is Endeavor backing WWE now, I feel like there's money. I think there was always money there, but it wasn't money they were always spending. But I think now, when you have an organization that's used to coming at things from a sports perspective, where you're trying to get the biggest top name talent and pay top dollar for it, they're now more willing to let Triple H basically say, okay, we need this guy, and this guy. And they'll say, okay, we'll write the check. Don't worry about it. Go do what you got to do. And, you know, because I remember they asked Triple H in the post-scrum, you know, in the media event after Survivor Series went off the air, and they said, you know, was Endeavor pushing for it? And he said, honestly, Endeavor didn't even really know. So, or TKO didn't really know. So the fact that he was able to kind of have the trust of them to go off and do what he's got to do is, I think that's a big sign going forward.
So then it makes me wonder, though, if that's also the tipping cap where maybe him and Vince didn't see eye to eye on the content or on the, you know, on the show running. Because Vince wouldn't allow that to happen. Vince, when he holds a grudge, that guy holds a grudge. I mean, you know, obviously, back in the day, he needed to bury the hatchet way quicker for Stone Cold Steve Austin because he was in a legitimate ratings battle with WCW, okay? So, you know, he needed to pull Austin back because Austin basically did the same thing. He walked out on him, and they didn't speak for quite a bit of time. And, you know, he was lucky that Jim Ross, you know, Stone Cold had a lot of respect for Jim Ross that he even took the phone call and had to sit down with Vince McMahon. So, obviously, a lot of things different this time around. You know, Vince was very hurt by CM Punk, and, you know, even Triple H and some of their promos were very real and put this guy on the spot. And he also says he changes, so let's see, because I kind of thought CM Punk had that, like, attitude, even as a person. I get it, sports entertainment and stuff like that, but had that cocky, arrogant attitude, and, you know, he felt like he wasn't getting his fair share, but he was.
And I feel like it's more believable, you know, 10 years ago, Triple H was still coming to the end of his full-time in-ring career and kind of transitioning behind the scenes. I feel like it's more believable that he has grown in 10 years than you could say Vince McMahon has, because Vince McMahon's mm-hmm. been the same, you know, person for the last 30, 40 years. It just took a while for us to find out about it. So
guys,
I find it
guys
easier to
coming
believe
in,
that Triple H extends the olive branch to him.
Guys walking into a UFC event with a friggin' cane, his pencil mustache, and, you know, his very jet black dyed hair that's receding big time. And he has The Undertaker walking him in, almost like The Undertaker walking in his father, because The Undertaker looks like Father Time has hit him pretty big, too.
Yeah, I mean, good for him. He's still staying in some sort of shape, but boy, once he stopped, like, training every year to be at WrestleMania, you can tell, I mean, he's not out of shape, but you can tell, like, he's, like, he's yeah. feeling it. He's feeling it in the joints, and
yep.
he's like, oh, man.
Yep, absolutely, but all right, nonetheless, pretty good and exciting times here. So that'll do it for our show. We want to thank Albert Plantamora for joining us, as always, with his football talk. Again, everyone, we do appreciate being flexible with us, and we plan on getting back to the regularly scheduled program. So I think it's only fitting we end the show with a CM Punk theme. Interesting story. You should go research it on why CM Punk uses this and how much this song has meant to him and the people that did it, Living Color. On behalf of Joe Caccavalli, I am Joe Scoa. You have been listening to Two Cups of Joe, a sports show right here on Sports Addict Media Radio. We'll see you next week. You have yourselves a good sports week.